This is the Friends of History Debating Society. I'm John Betts with Professor H.J. Mackinder, International Relations, Six Capitals, Six Points of View, Second Year of War, following what revelations we have. We trust none of them. These revelations from leaked documents could all be manufactured by Beijing, by Moscow, by Pyongyang, by Tehran, by unknown bad actors in cartels. However, the documents point to a slowdown stalemate in Ukraine, possibly a setback for Kyiv because of air defenses. They also point to other countries where the U.S. is surveilling private information. Some say not a surprise, but there are diplomatic moments that you don't want to reveal the fact that you're spying on people. We go to Beijing because Beijing always spies on people and doesn't care who knows it. Professor, your measure of Ukraine. Sometimes there are indications Ukraine is attempting to aid, I mean with hardware, Vladimir Putin. Other times Ukraine is presented
You mean Beijing is attempting to aid Putin?
Yes, I do. Thank you. Some other times it's suggested that Beijing is seeking a peace negotiation or to arbitrate. What is your measure now, given that these last days Beijing is going out of its way with warplanes and warships to threaten not only Taiwan, but also the Philippines?
Well, I think the first point is that one of these highly dubious papers that we have contains purported intercepts indicating that the Chinese were going to supply lethal weapons to the Russians. But it's clear that they are very, very frightened. Now, what do you make of China today? China is very, very dangerous, but she's not dangerous because of her sort of Teutonic, perfectly oiled Teutonic military machine. She's dangerous because her dictator, Xi Jinping, is he's a very ignorant man. Second, he isn't really all that smart. And third, he's highly erratic. So he could very easily, or not very easily, he could start a war either by accident or by miscalculation that would then be dreadful in Asia. The idea that he would win this war is, I just don't think that's ever going to, it's not going to happen. But we have, of course, we have economic information from China. It's almost entirely false and falsified. But statisticians, and there are some very good statisticians, are able to read statistics against each other. So they'll look at claimed production versus energy consumption versus quantity of goods exported and so forth and so on. And the consensus among people who really study China's economy critically, and this does not occur, this does not include the sages of Wall Street, I should say, or the editors of the Financial Times or the Wall Street Journal. They somehow have a different perspective on China. But it's generally accepted that China's economy is contracting, that the central government is now pouring money into the localities to keep them from going completely bankrupt so that they can at least pay some people, that the number of factories that are actually producing anything has dropped substantially, that exports are falling, that house prices are falling, I'm just trying to think what the second pillar is. But anyway, there are a couple of pillars of China's economy that are, of which housing is the most important. But they're all seeing downward price spirals. There is a banking crisis in the sense that you cannot go to your bank and take out your money now, even though the money is not convertible. They don't want to take it out. And there's also a wave of conversions of the ruble, which is convertible in Russia. So both of these countries face very severe financial problems. And these, of course, immediately become social problems. In China, the administration is seeking to offset her really intractable domestic problems. That she would have to listen to an economist, and there are any number of world-class economists a short walk from his house, from his office, to straighten this out. Even though this is the situation in China now is very, very difficult to resolve. In other words, a very hard math problem. You need a really smart economist to figure it out, and then you need a really good politician to put it into effect, and they don't have either of those things. Instead, they're introducing conscription, which suggests that they want to go to war. They are increasing the number of their ships and planes flying not only over poor old Taiwan. Remember, Taiwan's the size of Belgium. It's very well armed. And look at the problems that Belgium caused for General Ludendorff in World War I. Taiwan is not going to, Mr. Buffett, I know, knows everything, but he said he sold his $4 billion of Taiwan semiconductor stock because he was afraid of war there. Well, I think I would have kept the stock, and we'll know in a few years whether Buffett or I was right about that, but I don't actually own the stock, so it will just be hypothetical. Perhaps the two most sinister things that are going on in China. Now, one is that conscription is being introduced at the high school and early college level. And this has they've never had conscription in China before, in the People's Republic before. Now, why are they doing conscription? I think for political reasons, that Mr. Xi really has only one interest, and that is being in charge of China for the rest of his life. He couldn't care less. I mean, he doesn't run Taiwan, and he moans about this, but as I once asked Tiger Yang, the wolf warrior, I said, well, look, Mongolia you used to control for hundreds of years. And now it's an independent country, and before that, Russia controlled it. You know, I never hear you moaning about the loss of the sacred territory of Mongolia. And he got mad at me, but then he sent a flunky, an overworked foreign office guy to see me in my hotel room. And I quickly told him how this situation had come to being. He was astonished because I'd read all the negotiations, and But the point is that that Taiwan isn't a real issue. It's a political issue. And it figures in China because Xi imagines that if he can be somehow the person who recaptures Taiwan, that then he's really going to be in. If he makes a move, he's going to go down. It'll be the end of him. He's going to drown in the Taiwan Strait, as the Chinese say. The other thing that is rather sinister is that perhaps the smartest general in China, whose name is Liu Yajou, he's born in 1952, so he's already retired. He's married into a very powerful communist family. He was a four-star Air Force general. He speaks languages. He's very, very confident and very, very smart. He was a professor at Stanford University for a while long ago, and he was the head of the Chinese War College. And he repeatedly, and he's, you know, he's a Chinese patriot. I mean, he doesn't want, he says, look, you people, let's get serious. If we start a war, you know, the Japanese are going to sink our Navy in an afternoon. And if you add the Americans and all the others, this is a disaster. So the fact that they've arrested Liu Yajou, and there are rumors that he's going to get a death sentence, but I think that would lead. But that shows that Xi is actually going to attempt to purge the military. And that is just, you don't want to purge the military any more than you want to remove a hornet's nest from your porch just by holding it in your two hands and pulling it down from wherever it is. This is complete madness. And what people are saying from China is basically nobody is minding the store. Mr. Xi has just been to Guangdong province, and he visited a number of places. He didn't do much of anything. He was down there to see to accompany Mr. Macron, and Mr. Macron basically made a fool of himself. But Xi is always making a fool of himself. And he visited four places, including the fleet headquarters in Guangdong. And he really didn't look at anything. He didn't listen to anybody. And he talked about aspects of his thought, which are now required in Chinese schools, whereas English is no longer required. And you can imagine that a lot of Chinese parents are very upset about that. Anyway, people are remarking in China, he didn't say anything about the economy. And has anybody else said anything about the economy? No. All that we have are releases of statistics which are demonstrably falsified, and the evidence of the eyes of people who go to a city like Shenzhen or Dongguan, and they see that, one thing you can do is you can see what is the hourly wage rate for just people who have, you know, day labor, people who come in and work for a few hours. And it is very, very low, very, very low indeed. And what that means is that there's no demand for labor, and that means that the factories are not working. So I think that it's a great illusion to expect that China is really going to play very much of a role in any positive way. She's certainly not going to make peace between Ukraine and Russia, but she is dangerous. Just you mentioned the Philippines. Let me just briefly say, President Marcos of the Philippines went to Peking, where he was wined and dined, and they told him what great relations, how wonderful Philippine-Chinese friendship was going to be. But you've got to be cautious with those Americans, because somehow they're greedy for Philippine territory or whatever. And so Marcos went back to the Philippines, and within a day or two, there were Chinese frigates, otherwise known as Coast Guard cutters, deep in Philippine waters, trying to drive the Philippine Navy away. And when they couldn't drive them away, they fired military lasers at the Filipino officers and sailors, blinding them temporarily. And the Filipinos are not so stupid as to just accept this. They say, look, if they want to be friends with us, step one would be to withdraw their ships from our territorial waters, which the International Court has asserted belong to the Philippines, and stop firing military lasers at our sailors. But China seems to want to have it both ways. So I think that China is going to turn out to be a far less important player in all of this than we imagine.
Professor H.J. Mackinder, International Relations. Six capitals, six points of view. We're headed to Delhi, which is the capital of the most populous state on Earth. That's a contentious point, however, it's repeated often. But Delhi stands in for all the nations that are not participating now in sanctions regime, have not committed themselves either to Russia and China or to NATO. Watching very carefully, Brazil would be another one, the sub-Saharan Africa, South America, so the capital's watching when we come back. This is the Friends of History Debating Society. I'm John Batchelor.